Disruption Zone. Opportunity lives where the status quo dies. Talking to the greatest innovators, disruptors, and off-the-wall inventors we can scrounge up. You laugh, you'll learn, you'll be inspired. Now, here are your hosts, Leland Conway and Cameron Mills.
Adam Edelin joins us on the Disruption Zone, former Democratic candidate for governor, as well as former state auditor, and I'm just going to say it, good friend of mine. And man, it's good to talk to you. Thanks for coming back on with us.
Yeah, man, there are green shoots. There are those of us who are still getting stuff done, Leland, and I'm pleased to be in your company.
Yeah, you also have a working farm in addition to your business that you are running as well. How's that going? Is everything good on the farm right now?
Yeah, everything's good. You know, as you know, my dad's a farmer, and you know, is cranking at it, and I'm really proud of him and what's going on. Now, luckily, you know, farmers by the nature of their work are great at social distancing. So,
right.
You know, when you're out farming, you know, plowing several hundred acres or planting, you're by yourself. They've been at it for thousands of years.
Yeah. Have you seen these stories that have popped up? And we talked to Congressman Thomas Massie, who's also a farmer, last week about this, and he's very concerned about potential grocery store shortages of food, not because we don't have it, but because of the weird shift in supply lines. Like, I was reading this article about the toilet paper, right? And it was like, it's not that there isn't enough toilet paper to wipe everyone's backside. It's that the demand shifted from businesses to homes overnight. And it's kind of the same thing with the food, right? We've built this pipeline where most of the time we go out to eat. And so that's where the pipeline was geared. And now we're asking the same pipeline to shift to grocery stores. But that pipeline's like, well, I don't know how long this is going to last. I need to be able to get back to, you know what I mean? It's there's some concerns there.
It's a major concern, Leland. And I am, you know, I'll use an example that's along the same spirit there. You know, post 9/11, how did we not have a plan for a big run on the unemployment insurance system?
Wow. Yeah.
You know, it just drives me crazy that, you know, and I'm sure there's lots of blame to go around, and I'm sure all parties are involved. But how did we post 9/11 not plan at some point that there would be a big run on unemployment insurance? And, you know, and you still see these horror stories in every county in Kentucky about people not being able to access their unemployment. And that's what it's there for.
Right.
And, you know, obviously this is a national issue, but, you know, to go back to the point about the food chain, how did we not think through this? This is what drives me crazy. And considering the amount that we invest as taxpayers, and as big as our government is in terms of employment, you would think that there were people who were thinking through these eventualities.
Right.
And it drives me nuts that we were caught with our pants down in so many different areas.
Well, there were outbreaks of pandemics that didn't turn into pandemics, or at least they didn't turn into what we're seeing today. But we had practice runs on this, 2009, 2011, 2014. And we still didn't learn our lesson, you know, and it's like, I'm still flabbergasted that we can't get, you know, proper PPE to our healthcare workers. Granted, a lot of hospitals are not overrun because this virus appears to be geographical in nature and how it attacks. Where people are close together, lots of people are getting sick. Where people aren't close together, it's just not happening. But, you know, you're right. We didn't think this through. And now there's like these choke-offs in the supply line. I'm of the thinking, Adam, that if we could all wear a mask, and I want to get into a discussion about this, and some innovative things could happen at businesses that we could probably open up in 2 weeks with some minor changes and tweaks to how we actually go about business, but also with maybe not thinking about bigger events and mass gatherings for a while. But at least the basics of the economy could be back in a couple of weeks if we think about some innovative ways to do that.
And listen, we're great problem solvers in this country, particularly the private sector. And this is a big opportunity for government officials at every level, I think, to engage the ingenuity of the private sector to help solve these problems. In the same way that, you know, when FDR was leading this country during the Great Depression and a global war emerged in the form of the Nazis and the Japanese, you know, Roosevelt worked with the private sector to make sure that we could have the munitions and the equipment we needed to fight a two-front war, and we got it done.
Right.
And I think it's a tremendous missed opportunity. It's why I opined a little earlier this week, you know, that I think Governor Beshear has done a fine job and will get a high grade for the delivering, you know, making people feel better and more secure and building this sense that we will get through this. But he has two really big business brains in his cabinet in the form of Jim Gray, who built a billion-dollar company out of whole cloth. Mm-hmm. And then Larry Hayes, who has built a really great logistics company. These guys need to be empowered and engage their peers in the private sector to have a plan for how we rethink the economy, how we modernize and rebuild. Because Leland, while there can be no upside to the coronavirus and the lives we've lost, there is no silver lining.
Right.
But there can be upside to recovery.
Yeah.
And there can be upside to reimagining our economy in a pretty powerful way. But we need business minds doing that. Luckily, we've got them.
Right.
I just think it's time to tap them and put them to work.
Yeah, I think part of, like, you know, obviously last week there's been some protests at the Capitol, and I think a lot of it really breaks down to communication. You know, I have personally been pestering. I know other people that have been trying to get the governor's attention on this, and I'll say this: I know that his heart is in the right place. I know he wants to save Kentucky's lives.
No doubt.
I know this. You know, I don't doubt his sincerity in that sense at all. And I know I've taken some shots at him on Twitter, but you know me, that's what I do. And it's sarcasm, and it's meant to be somewhat humorous.
Sure.
But the bottom line is, he's a human being who cares about other human beings. But
yes,
think
he does.
I think there needs to be an understanding that with all great leadership comes great vision. And you mentioned the two-front war in World War II. I've used that analogy before when I talk about how we should approach this virus. We're Americans, for goodness sakes. We can fight two fronts at a time. There is a way to continue to try to do our best to extinguish a virus, but also do our best to reignite the economy. And if we're not, you know, managing both of those balls, we're in deep, deep trouble. And I think that the protest came back to a, you know, putting off of even mentioning the economy. And I know that we can't say for certain that on May 1st, everything opens back up. We can't. But at least say if we meet these benchmarks, then on May 1st, this can open. And then if we meet these benchmarks, then on May 15th, this can open. And if we have to slide that, people will understand. But it gives businesses hope that they can plan for a reemergence.
That's exactly right. I couldn't agree more. And it also, it affords us an opportunity to do in the military what's called the after action review, which has become commonplace in almost every business of any size in this country, is what did we do right and what did we do wrong? And what we have learned is that the global supply chain certainly has its upsides in terms of you know, helping us produce products affordably. But we've also got to understand that there is a need for redundancy. I mean, the fact that we've had to go to the Chinese, who have absolutely lied about the scope and the scale of this outbreak from the beginning, to rely on them for equipment for our frontline health workers, to rely on them for respirators, Leland, is insane.
Right.
And I'm not a protectionist at all. I am not somebody who doesn't believe that we have an integrated global economy. But damn it to hell, in instances like this, there needs to be a strategic stockpile of our stuff, because and I don't care if you're Republican, Democrat, Libertarian, Liberal, Conservative, whatever.
Right.
I think we all share the outrage of watching the heroes of this crisis, who aren't politicians, who are these frontline healthcare workers who are driving to the very limits of their physical and mental health with masks that they can only change once a week, if at all.
Yeah.
That pisses me off.
Yeah, and it should.
And we can never let this country get back to that again. So not only is having a plan for how we economically open the country back up, but economically how we you know, we build an economy that provides this stuff for our own people,
yeah,
particularly in times of need.
All right, well, let's break this down into two areas. How about this for the rest of this discussion? Because I think you've kind of outlined a couple things, and I agree with you, by the way, on the whole China issue. And right now I'm seeing stories that they may be holding up vital medications. I fear there's almost an emerging medical cold war that could be developing between our two countries because of our reliance on that. But at the same time, and I'll just throw this out there because this is what makes it hard, I think. I read this interesting article about the guy who owns the factory of the largest mask maker in America. And back in 2011, I think it was H1N1 or it might have been 2009 with the SARS, but one of those outbreaks, he went into full gear at the request of the medical community here in America and the government, and he was running 24 hours a day. And then he ended up with a huge stockpile that they wouldn't buy because as soon as the pandemic went away, they went right back to China because they could buy these masks for 2 cents a piece. The cheapest he could manufacture them was 10 cents a piece. So he lost a ton of employees, a lot of money, and almost lost his business. And so now, you know, there was this big article about how he was being criticized for not going 24/7. He said, look, I'll make as many masks as I can, but I'm turning down orders because I don't want to get caught with a stockpile and lose my business again. How do we manage that minefield where we want to bring as much back home as we can? We want to stay open to trade, but we got to balance the cost of labor in America with the cost of labor in other countries.
That's exactly right. And I think for the purposes of building a strategic stockpile, they ought to buy, when we're building that stockpile ought to be supplied by domestic producers.
Right.
Just the way that our strategic oil supply is provided by,
yeah,
you know, American oil producers. I mean, certainly we want to be competitive on the global market, and certainly businesses have an obligation to provide services and benefits at the cheapest cost they can for the end user. That's the essence of capitalism. But there are places where our government has to make sure that we keep vital industries that are that help undergird the national security of this country.
Right.
And I think, you know, I haven't seen the article, but the case you just referenced is a great example. I mean, I get that they can get them in China for 2 cents. Great. And it may cost a dime in America, but that's 10 cents in America that we don't have to ship, that
right,
we have total quality. We have total confidence in their quality and that where they're produced domestically.
Right.
I am hawkish on China. I think they are a strategic competitor.
Yeah.
I think they're going to have to make the decision whether they're an adversary. And that's something that I really want to get to as a strategic global issue for the United States after we get through this. Because
right,
I think what, you know, I'm not for inflaming this right now because we've got to get through it. But listen, everybody knows the Chinese lied about the scope and the scale of this pandemic.
Yeah.
Everybody knows it.
Yeah.
They are our bankers. They're, you know, second in holding debt, I think, American debt to the Japanese. And they are and we also can't let them be the provider of critical equipment and supplies that we need to support the health infrastructure in the United States.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree, and I liked your answer about how, you know, there's sometimes we need to pay the extra 8 cents.
Yeah.
Sometimes we just gotta pay the extra. All right, so let's break this down into two areas real quick. Let's start with first how emerging ought to look. I read an article on Politico the other day that had a scary title, "The Shutdown Backlash is Coming Soon with a Vengeance." And essentially it's kind of a macro look at what's been happening at the Capitol with the protests. And it's like, if we don't have some sort of plan, it may not be 50% of the country, but a large chunk of the country is going to rebel against this. And that could be dangerous on a whole host of different ways. So we got to get our handle on what the plan is going forward. How do you see a reemergence benchmark plan actually looking for businesses?
Well, I think it's going to have to be, I think all of this ought to be governed by metrics. And one of the things that seems to be foreign to government, but that is everybody in the private sector knows, is that if you can't measure it, you can't manage it. How many times have you heard that, brother? It's a cliche in the business world because it is true. And so this is why the testing thing is so important. But we need to make sure that we have metrics that we hit. And when we, upon hitting those metrics, that this thing, the opening of this country, the opening of this Commonwealth, it scales out from there. So, you know, making sure that we maintain social distancing, make sure that we have hit our peak and that we're managing, you know, new cases, and making sure that each one of those is connected to an action to open up the economy, I think is really important. You know, obviously I'm a fan of how this governor has our governor has comforted people through the early stages of this, but it's time to pivot.
Right.
And I think the two or three governors I think who have done the best job of the pivot are Mike DeWine in Ohio. Mm-hmm. I think Andrew Cuomo in New York and Gavin Newsom in California. And these guys, by the way, are all over the ideological spectrum. Right. This doesn't need to be governed by ideology. It needs to be governed by practical leaders who understand that you cannot that we have to simultaneously kill this virus and its spread while planning for a reemergence.
Right.
And it is the two front war, and this notion that you can't do two betrays every bit of history of this country.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's remarkable. And so we do have to be planning. And I think having and I hope that the governor Beshear begins communicating this. I think he's going to say some stuff this afternoon. Governor DeWine, you know, was the first, no surprise, to announce that they're going to begin opening up in Ohio May 1st, and that it's going to be a slow, staggered approach.
Right.
But in doing that, Leland, he has communicated to the public that he's the man in charge, and he owns this, that he's got it. Right.
Right.
And when someone does that, it doesn't just make them feel good that we're going to get through this. It is that there is a plan for what the world's going to look like. And that's what people want, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
Listen, there are ideologically motivated people on both sides of the spectrum who are going to use crises like this to their own advantage. But the 99% of us who just want our country to be able to get through this and for people to be safe and for us to be able to make sure that there's some path to prosperity when we get out, that's where the common ground is. And I think we've got, you know, and it means reaching out. Like, I was blown away yesterday. You know, Leland, most people in Kentucky who pay attention to politics know that you and I've gotten to be pretty good buddies, even though we don't agree on everything.
Right.
This was what blew me away, is that yesterday Governor Cuomo went on Hannity.
Yeah. Wow.
the implicit message there from Governor Cuomo is, I'm a Democratic governor, but I'm not the governor of just Democrats.
Right, right.
And that's what we need. And the two had a very honest dialogue, much like you and I were having, that I think it was impossible to walk away not feeling confident that Cuomo's got this under control, right?
Right, right.
I mean, if he didn't have his stuff down, he sure wouldn't go on Hannity.
Yeah.
And that's what we need more of. And because this is about, you know, one of the great things about this country is that when we're tested, people tend to come together, but they stay together because there's a vision they buy into.
Right,
And we need more of that in Kentucky. We need more of that in America.
I agree. Here's something I posted on social media yesterday, that a reopening plan should look something like this. And I said to people in my post, I was like, look, add to this, pick apart the ideas. I don't care, but we have to start having this discussion. But the way I would like to see it unfold is that in 2 weeks, if businesses can establish an ongoing customer social distancing plan and show that to us, you know, here's how we're going to keep our restaurants. We're not going to seat booth back to back. We're not going to seat tables next to each other. You know, stores have already mostly implemented this, so there isn't a lot of work to do here. But if businesses can submit a plan to establish an ongoing customer social distancing plan, if we can do what I was walking into a grocery store the other day, and there was a sign for the employees that said mandatory temp testing this way. It was for their employees. They can test the employees' temperature every day before they go to work. And we're a few weeks out, but as soon as we get them, these fast acting test results, we need to, if they're cheap enough, we need to deploy them to the businesses so that the businesses can, you know, test their employees once a week. And then I would say the public should continue to wear masks and continue to try to social distance from each other. and then hold off on mass gatherings until we're clear of a potential outbreak, and then we look at the focus on hospitals being stocked up on PPE. Once we've reached those metrics and hospitals aren't going to get overrun, then we have to sort of trust in herd immunity a little bit and get back to work. That's what I envision as a way that we could sort of set these metrics and then open up sectors of the economy.
Yep. And it's got to be, and listen, we all know that it's going to be a slow process, and we all know that it's going to be a graduated process. But if our leaders will communicate that to us, I think it'll build a lot of trust and a lot of patience.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that really is the challenge for leaders at the state, local, and federal level is, you know, of course we know we're going to get through this. I think leaders have done a fine job of a nice dose of an antidepressant to an anxious people, right?
Right.
But you have to transition from that to having a more future focus. And I think the best way to do that is not even just let it be, you know, determined by leaders in our government, but let it be determined by leaders in our government with input from the private sector, because these are, I don't know, particularly at the small business level, Leland, where small businesses become like secondary families. I don't know an owner who wants to put his employees at risk.
Right.
And so why not ask them, you know, what are good ideas? You know, one thing again, and I don't mean to sound like a fanboy, but he's really done an excellent job. Is, you know, Cuomo in his press conferences daily says, send us good ideas.
Right, right.
And so, you know, in the tech world, that's called being open source, right?
Right.
Let's mine the collective wisdom of the people of this state and this country to help us get open faster.
Yeah, I was simple ideas. I mean, Congressman Massey brought this up the other day. You know, you could take factories, and this isn't, I'm not asking for a mandate. I'm just saying innovative ways that businesses could say, hey, we can protect people if you let us get back to work. Factories could install, you know, sliding automatic doors that open when they read your key card, when they see you coming. That way you don't have 200 people in a factory touching the same doorknob. You know, or pressing the same glass. You know, you could basically make the P95 mask or N95 or whatever it's called mask, standard in any kind of manufacturing facility. That protects not only saves lives from coronavirus, but next flu season it saves lives. You know,
it
there's
does.
Innovative ways like that, that if we had a round table of sorts with these business minds coming together with our leaders, political leaders, and saying, hey, we can do this, this, and this. Oh, great. Well, I think we can protect lives that way. Next thing you know, we have a plan for reemergence.
And so, and what I would say is, we have a public health czar in the form of Fauci, right? And
yep.
I think he's become... You know, I appreciate that the president, you know, has him out in front, and I think he has become someone that the country largely trusts. We need somebody like that from the business sector, man.
Yeah.
Who is and I just think, and maybe that's even done better at the state level. I don't know, but having someone who, you know, folks can look to, and Leland, as you know, I read a lot, and I've especially read even more over the last month. But there's this terrific book written by Eric Larson called The Splendid and the Vile about Winston Churchill's first year of prime minister.
Right.
And I thought everything on Churchill. There's a lot new in this book, and I would recommend it to people. But Churchill's immediate problem was that the Britain wasn't producing enough fighter aircraft, not enough Spitfires to be able to hold the Germans off, right?
So
he went and he picked this guy out of who was a publisher of all things, who was just known as a hard ass, named Lord Beaverbrook. Beaverbrook.
I love that name, Lord Beaverbrook. That's incredible.
And within months, Lord Beaverbrook had tripled Spitfire manufacturing and may very well and played a huge role in keeping Britain from falling, just as the French did. And the point here is that history provides us an example. And when we do a good job, when our leaders feel secure enough to elevate and empower individuals to help advance the cause of this nation, it almost always works.
Yeah. The macro side of this, I want to talk about what you think, what you foresee as a businessman are the shifts in the economy going forward. But first, what do you think is, you know, I'm seeing polls all over the place that people are so afraid they don't actually want to reopen. And I think there was a Kentucky legislator, and I don't know which one it was, so I can't attribute it the name, but they said your outlook on this virus is directly tied to whether or not you have a paycheck coming in. And I think there's a lot of Americans who still have a paycheck coming in, but they're able to stay at home and watch Netflix in a bubble, and they don't see, you know, I had someone on Twitter the other day was accusing me of not wanting people to live because I kept talking about business, and she was a nurse, and she said, you need to come to work with me one day and you'll see how bad this is. And I'm like, well, you need to talk to my friend who 2 weeks before this virus broke out invested all of his money, leveraged his house and everything he had in a business that's now defunct. You know, go on his front lines for a day. In other words, you know, the mark of an intelligent person, Adam, is someone who can hold two ideas in their head at the same time, right?
Exactly. Like,
I can hold the idea that I care for and want to save as many lives as possible from this virus, while at the same time holding the idea that I want to save as many livelihoods as possible. That's possible to do. And not only is it possible, but it's necessary. Why do you think so many people are in this bubble where they don't realize what's happening the longer we stay shut down?
Yeah, I think it's because leadership is only talk to one side of the equation.
Yes.
And I think what we need are I think we need more Governor Cuomo's going on Hannity, man.
Yeah.
I just do.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, and it is, you know, I mean, I think it's a little insulting from a historical point of view, particularly an American historical point of view, to say that we're not capable of doing two things at once.
Right.
I mean, you know, and I keep using Franklin Roosevelt as an example, but this guy simultaneously implemented his plan to get us out of the Great Depression. At the same time, he readied this country for global war, and Leland, he did it from a freaking wheelchair.
Right.
I mean, this is this notion that somehow we can't walk and chew gum. has a lot to do with this. We just don't have high expectations for our public leaders anymore. And
that's
a shame.
Point. Yeah, I think that's a good point.
And it manifests itself. What we need are leaders who say, you know what, I got this.
Yeah.
Not only are we going to beat COVID-19, and not only are we going to minimize the loss of life, but I'm going to put together a plan to make sure that our economy recovers as quickly as possible. Those are not mutually exclusive, and
right.
It drives me crazy that there is an expectation amongst people that we can't do both. Not only can we do both, we must do both.
But I think there's some responsibility on the part of the media for why politicians are afraid to take that mantle up. I think certain elements of the media have held our politicians hostage to a very particular and narrow set of reactions to this virus. And it has to do with, if you mention the economy, we're going to blame you for every death that happens after you say it. And I think there's a lot of politicians that are nervous to talk about anything but that life-saving side of the equation, because they're afraid that as soon as they talk about reopening, they're going to be blamed for every death going forward.
If I would suggest, Leland, and I would tell any elected official in America this, that if you are not actively developing a plan to help us recover prosperity in the economy in this country, that you're going to create you're going to further the public health emergency, because people will feel so desperate that they're going to return to the front lines.
Yeah.
And that's what we can't have.
Right. Yeah, you're right.
Uncertainty is as much of a contributor to the coronavirus's ability to kill people as anything.
100%.
And, you know, and the notion, again, that we do not expect our leaders to be able to pursue two fronts is nuts.
Yeah.
And so whether you're a Democrat and you like the FDR analogy, or you're a Republican and you like the Reagan analogy of you know, supercharging the economy while winning the Cold War, all of our greats have always done multiple things at once.
Yeah. You're right. You're absolutely right. And I agree with you. All right. Let's look at the macro real quick. You're a businessman. How do you see the business landscaping shifting and changing in the future? Because I think, and this, I mentioned this to somebody who was once again accusing me of wanting people to die on Twitter. And I said, look, no one who's calling for this, actually, I retweeted you when I said this.
Yeah.
None of us are asking to necessarily reopen everything and go back to normal tomorrow. We're all well aware that the old normal is dead and gone. It's going to be a new normal. We have to build it. What will that look like, in your opinion, economically, business-wise? What are the landscapes? What should people be looking for? Where should people start looking for jobs? Where do you think the sectors that are going to grow are?
I think a lot of us have been forced to reexamine the work location relationship.
Yeah.
You know, I have a very good friend of mine who has a terrific company, 150 employees. All but a couple are working remotely, does business in, 12 states. And he is utterly blown away at how productive his people are working from home. Utterly blown away. I have heard this from a lot of different folks, Leland.
Right.
So, you know, one of the big sectors that I think is going to be impacted is the commercial real estate sector, because I think you've got business leaders now are saying, if I can ensure productivity, why do I need to provide, a 20,000 square feet for 100 right. employees when I could maybe use, 10,000 square feet
right.
and have convening space? I mean, this is, and you think about how heavily our pension funds and the, our money markets in the United States are invested in these REITs, these real estate investment trusts.
Right.
That's real impact. I think, what folks are learning, the ability of companies like Zoom. I'm using Zoom 3 to 4 times a day, Leland, and it doesn't replace a face-to-face meeting.
Right.
But it works. It's yeah. effective, right?
Right.
And so I think these tech companies that create connectivity are really good places to consider making investments, because I think this is a big part of the new normal.
Yeah.
I think commercial real estate, the savvy guys in that space are going to have to rethink this, because I think it's going to have real impact.
Yeah.
And then we've got to be ready for just things that these blinking red lights about how things are going to change. I could be wrong, but I don't think, when we take the kids to McDonald's or Wendy's or 2 or 3 years, I don't think the people who work there are going to be wearing anything other than branded masks.
Right.
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 I think masks and gloves are here to stay.
Yeah.
And so there's going to be a lot of impact, particularly in those economic spaces that are customer face forward, right?
Yeah.
Retail.
Right.
Food service, entertainment. I mean, this is going to change a lot. And, we need to be in a position to benefit from that.
Yeah.
And there are ways to do it, but we've got to understand that there is going to be no return to normalcy as we knew it. I mean, there are going to be things that change. Just like, I remember before 9/11, Leland, because I consistently run late, I remember that, honest to God, if you could get to the airport 15 or 20 minutes before your flight left, you could get to it, right?
Right.
Not anymore, man. It's the new normal.
The new normal. Yeah. Get your junk touched every time. Yep.
Yeah. Get used to the masks, man.
Yeah.
I mean, we're going to see them. There will be people who are wearing, Ralph Lauren masks.
Yeah.
There will be people who are wearing branded masks walking around town, and it's going to look a bit like China.
Yeah.
And I think some of that is overkill, but I think it's also the new normal. And so, understanding that the macro level, we've got a big opportunity here. I think the transition to renewable energy, and I say that admitting to your many listeners that I have a stake in this industry.
Yeah.
But those things that we can rely upon to produce for us a customized product, I think you're going to see more of it. So whether it's renewable energy, whether it's resourcing domestic supply lines.
Yeah.
I mean, these are things that are going to happen because they have to.
We could see a shift back towards manufacturing when this is over.
Yeah.
I also think that, we're seeing that tech is hiring. I think if you're a small business owner and you're not already online, you should probably start tinkering with what you do to provide more online service, because I think people are finding out how easy it is to have stuff delivered home. And and that's going to be, where a lot of people may still want to go to a retail store to look at something, but they may end up buying it online later. you know, to limit their number of trips out, that kind of thing. So I see those kinds of shifts potentially taking place. And anybody who wants to design those designer masks is probably going to make a fortune here in the next couple of years if that's a business you want to start.
That's I'm making a note now, Leland.
Yeah, let's go into business together. Let's see if we can get something going. And also, you know, on the tech side, this isn't a business thing, but my sister's a pastor. And I just spent about half an hour on the phone with her today before I talked to you, advising her on some technology that she could use to you know, she's like, I never thought of this. She has a small church in East Texas. Most of her congregation is elderly. She's like, but I've got to find another way to deliver this message to my people. And her son, my nephew, is a pastor in Louisiana. And get this, he has a small church, normally 50 to 60 people. His live Facebook messages have been getting 600 watchers, 600 different people, right?
So, Leland, and that's you and I love innovation, and let's just take a minute to acknowledge that the faith community has freaking killed it in this.
Yeah, absolutely.
I have at my church, First Pres here in Lexington, I have gotten two phone calls from folks checking in on us. I've gotten a postcard, and all our services are on Facebook.
Yeah.
Absolutely killing it.
Yeah.
And so, you know, what I would say is if the preachers and faith leaders are driving innovation, our political leaders ought to be listening to them.
Right. Right. Yeah. I fully agree 100%. Listen, I don't know. Anytime I have a conversation with you, I always walk away feeling a little more optimistic. Even like you said, we don't always agree on policy, but we do agree on the optimism and, you know, faith that we're going to get through this. I appreciate you taking time to chat and help kind of just, I think we just need more conversations like this, just more people sitting down, having a discussion, ideas come out of that. Somebody might be listening to this and think, hey, here's something we could do and take it to somebody that can do something about it. I don't know. I hope that's what happens.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And me too. And I'm excited. We're going to get through this, and we need folks to know that we're going to get through it, but also that we are capable of building something great on the other side.
Yeah. All right. Adam Edlund, thanks for your time, man. I appreciate it. Thanks for coming on the Disruption
Zone.
Thanks,
Leland. All right. See you, bud.
Bye-bye. Just fantastic. And, you know, again, look, Adam and I don't agree on everything. You know, I would take issue with FDR getting us out of the Great Depression. Fine. But he also used the Reagan example on balance. And what he was saying, and his point stands, that all the great American leaders have inspired America to take on two things at once. And I just want to go back to this particular governor who I've jokingly been calling Andy Dad Jeans. Look, I'm ribbing at him, but the truth of the matter is I do believe as a human being he wants to save human lives, but he's got to understand that the cost in lives is going to be surpassing pretty soon because of the economic devastation that we're going to live under for some time now. You know, that's going to surpass the number of people killed by this virus. And he's got to recognize that as a visionary leader, he has to take on both tasks, the task of dealing with the virus, but also the task of helping the economy. And these protests that broke out at the Capitol, you know, I was very disappointed that the governor, the same governor who took a bullhorn and cheered with teachers who stormed the Capitol under the Bevin administration and who wrote an opinion that said when the Bevin administration made it difficult for teachers to get to certain areas of the Capitol that he was breaking the law, this same governor now blocked people from coming in the Capitol. He cordoned off the Capitol, and then he soundproofed, it looks like, according to at least one media source, he tried to soundproof the room where he gives his briefings to lock those people out. They resorted to driving around the Capitol, which I thought was really funny, but the point is, you've got the reason these protests are happening is because they don't feel like their point of view is being heard. And then we have these weirdos that have sort of bought into this cultish following of him who are now threatening to boycott and destroy businesses that showed up at that protest. All these businesses want is for their side to be acknowledged and for hope to be offered and for a plan to be given. That's it. And now, thankfully, the governor has started to talk about this, and he's joined a group of other governors, and that's a step in the right direction. But I think what Adam is pointing out that makes a lot of sense to me is to tap these business minds. I know Jim Gray. I've known him for a long time, former mayor of Lexington. He's a good guy. Again, politically, we sometimes don't agree. But from a business perspective, the guy has an unmatched mind for business. tap these minds, put together some businesses from across the political spectrum and across the industry spectrum in Kentucky, bring together the distillers, bring together the horse breeders, bring together the coal miners, bring together the construction workers, bring together the bio firms, bring together the tech firms, bring together these people and sit them down on a panel and say, hey, bring me your good ideas. How can we reopen and protect lives at the same time? When you put an incubate, put ideas like that in an incubator, good things are going to come out because that's what Americans do. I am very passionate about this. I am very passionate about this because I've studied leadership my entire life, and leadership thinks big, and you have to think big. And I know it's a big burden to try to save people from a virus that's nasty, but you've also got to think about saving their livelihoods. It is a two-front battle. And I'm telling you right now, if we only fight on one side of it, we're going to get taken over by whatever side we don't pay attention to. You got to fight the virus. You got to fight for the economy. All right. Hey, look, there you go. I've pontificated enough. If you want to help us spread the message, thousands of downloads a week. I'm so excited about the success of this podcast. Just share it with your friends. And it's a free subscription. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, on Google Play. We're on the iHeartRadio app. Just go to the iHeartRadio app and search for The Disruption Zone and sign up, and it will be delivered straight to you. You'll have me delivered right to your pocket, and the subscription is free, and I'm doing my best to keep it that way. So we just got to spread the word, get people listening to the podcast. You can follow me on Twitter. It's at Leland Show and at Zone Disruption, and you can follow me on Instagram. It's at Greatly Londo and at The Disruption Zone. Thanks to my co-executive producer and co-host Cameron Mills, as well as Dynamics Audio Productions, which provides the music for this program. DXAudio.com if you want to know more about their production. Anything from doing like restoring old videos that you had that you don't have form, you know, you don't have a VCR, they can transfer that to something you can watch now. All the way up to a major Hollywood production, because he's done major Hollywood productions. It's pretty amazing stuff with DXAudio.com. So check him out for all your production needs. Thanks again for listening. I am Leland Conway. This is The Disruption Zone.